Our lives are generally spent focusing on what's happening today. However, Skip Heitzig reminds us that we also need to take some time and consider what sort of influence we're having on the generation of tomorrow.
Solomon said, "Children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." So what are we doing with this wonderful heritage, this fruit that God has given to us? Of all of life's occupations, parenting is the most important. Listen to the wise words of Socrates to the men of his generation. He said to them, "Why do you turn and scrape every stone to gather wealth and take so little care of the children to whom one day you must relinquish all?"
Make the connection.
The most crucial moment in a relay race is the baton pass. Races can be won or lost during this moment, and it's such an important part of the race that relay teams will spend endless hours perfecting their technique in order to make sure it's done quickly and fluidly. That's also a technique we need to perfect when it comes to passing on a legacy to our children. Now today, Skip Heitzig shows us how Abraham, who had a tremendous heritage to pass on, did his best to make sure nothing was lost in the transfer to his son. But before we get started with our study today here on The Connection, we're just 1 week away from Halloween, which makes it a perfect time to take a look at what the documentary Shattered reveals about this particular holiday. Here's more.
The innocence of today's youth is being shattered. A recent obsession with the occult and spirituality is shattering any semblance of a Christian worldview among our children, even among those raised in the church. Dark creatures like vampires and werewolves are shattering the traditional image of being a hero. Virtual reality is shattering our hold on physical reality. Is there anything that can be done to stop this trend? Shattered. A documentary hosted by Skip Heitzig explores the impact of today's media and what you and I can do about it. In order to help save our youth from having their lives shattered, we need to act now. Find out what we can do in this fascinating documentary. Order Shattered today for just $15. If we don't do something now, we'll have nothing but pieces or broken lives to pick up later. Call 1-800-922-1888. Or visit connectionradio.org.
Truth is, we need to make sure we pass on all that we've learned in our walk with God, not just what we've learned about certain holidays, to the next generation. At times, that can seem like an impossible task. How do we convince our kids to also follow God? We'll see if we can't learn some tips from Abraham's life in today's study.
And make the connection.
Open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 24, and Skip Heitzig will get our study started by sharing how a parent's hope of their child growing up and changing the world isn't beyond the realm of possibility.
How important is it to consider the next generation? That includes your children, your grandchildren. Does age give us the right to turn inward and think only of ourselves and hold on to our resources selfishly rather than dispersing them for the next? I read a story about a Scottish farmer named Fleming. He was a poor man, hardworking man, who worked to eke out a living for his poor family. As he was working one day, this farmer heard cries of a child in a nearby ditch. And the farmer dropped his tools, ran over, and there in a bog, up to his waist in mud, was this child going deeper and deeper. The farmer pulled that kid out and saved him from a slow and agonizing death. Took him home, cleaned him up. They didn't know who he was. They kept him overnight. The next day, A fancy carriage pulled up in front of the shack owned by the farmer. And out stepped a well-dressed nobleman who thanked the farmer for taking care of his son and offered to pay this farmer some money for saving him. Farmer said, "I can't take any money for doing that. That's what anybody would do." Just then, the farmer's son poked his head out of the door of the hovel. And the nobleman, seeing the son, said, "Is that your boy?" The farmer said proudly, "Yes, he is." And the nobleman started again, "I'll make a deal. I'll take him and I'll give him the best education. If he's anything like his father, he's going to grow up to be somebody you can be proud of." And that's exactly what happened. That young boy graduated later on from St. Mary's Medical College in London and became Sir Alexander Fleming, who became known as the one who invented penicillin. Now, some years went by, and that nobleman's son had a dread disease. You know what saved him? Penicillin. That nobleman, by the way, was Lord Randolph Churchill. And that nobleman's son was Sir Winston Churchill. Interesting how those two boys' journeys met and met again. Here's the point of that. What fathers do with their sons will impact the world. Every generation is the product of the previous. Now here in our study, Abraham is a true father to his son Isaac. He gets involved in his son's future, in his son's marriage. Now we're about to read a very ancient and what sounds to our ears very odd dating procedure. But we're going to sort of touch on that and at the same time bypass that to get into what I think is really the crux here. The crux is Abraham is passing the baton of leadership and success as patriarch of the family to his son Isaac. And you could think of this on a number of levels, I suppose. You could think in terms of your own business, somebody moving up in the office who's going to take your place, move up a notch. You could think of it in terms of a church. Bringing in new leadership on any level. You could think of it, and especially, I hope you will, in terms of your own family. What are you doing with your own family? Solomon said, "Children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." So what are we doing with this wonderful heritage, this fruit that God has given to us? Of all of life's occupations, parenting is the most important. Listen to the wise words of Socrates to the men of his generation. He said to them, "Why do you turn and scrape every stone to gather wealth and take so little care of the children to whom one day you must relinquish all?" Well, it's a long chapter. If you look to the very end, you see 67 verses. We're not going to read them all for obvious reasons. But we're going to read enough of them to find four principles. Principles that were in Abraham's thinking that he used in passing this baton of leadership, of patriarch, onto his son Isaac. And the first is the principle of selflessness. Selflessness. Look at the first four verses with me. "Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, 'Please put your hand under my thigh.'" That's an ancient custom. "And I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven, the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac." Notice the first verse. I want you just to look at the description of Abraham once again. I find it fascinating. It says Abraham was old, meaning there's not much time left. It continues, he was well advanced in age, meaning he didn't have much energy left. We don't know how old he exactly was, but scholars will pin it down from between age 137 to 175. Now, his son Isaac is about 40 years old, and he's still single. I know that's going to encourage some of you. And so he's thinking, I got to help my son out here. And look also in verse 1, the description continues that the Lord had blessed him in all things. Now, if you want a description of your life when you are old and advanced in years, wouldn't you like that to be said of you? The Lord blessed you in all things. And I don't think this is just referring to financial blessings. This man, Abraham, has a legacy of faith. He has walked with God for so many, many years. Now, here's a guy, old and blessed. He's come to a point in his life where a lot of people, frankly, would turn inward. They got it made. They're blessed. They just want to sit where they're at, enjoy the status quo, enjoy the blessing, period. And Abraham could have been tempted to do that. He could have thought, you know, I'm just going to tell stories now that I'm old, play golf out here at all the golf courses in Canaan, and just soak it up. But rather than turning inward to himself, he turns outward toward his son, because he wants to make sure that his son is well taken care of by having a wife. Now, we'll get to that a little bit more in just a moment. But I heard about a man who was sentenced for a crime. He committed it. He was sentenced to the penitentiary. He was a young man. He stood before a judge who knew this young man since he was just a little kid. In fact, the judge knew that young man's father. He knew him well because the young man's father was a legal scholar and wrote a famous legal work known as The Law of Trusts. He was well known, but he was a busy guy. And the judge, before he sentenced him, said, "Young man, you remember your father, do you not?" "Oh, I remember him well, sir." And the judge said, because he wanted to just lay this heavy thing on this young man before he sentenced him, he said, "Before I read your sentence, I want you just to think about your wonderful dad. And let me ask you, son, of all of the memories of that past relationship, what stands out more clearly than anything else?" There was a pause in the courtroom, and the young man said to the judge, "I remember going to Dad for advice. He looked up from what he was writing and he said, 'Run along, boy, I'm busy.' When I went for companionship, he turned me away and he said, 'Run along, son, this book must be finished.' Your Honor, you remember him as a great lawyer. I remember him as a lost friend." And that judge looked at that boy and he muttered under his breath, "Alas, finished the book, lost the boy." Abraham wanted to make sure in his old, advanced age that that boy was not lost, that he was taken care of. Hence this command. Now, here's a principle I want to bring up from this. Leadership must include a selfless sharing of resources so the next generation can succeed. Once again, leadership must include a selfless sharing of resources so that the next generation can succeed. And let's bring it closer to home for us, dads. Fathers, we are responsible. You can try to pass it off to Sunday school teachers, pastors, and moms. But in the Bible, as I see it, fathers are responsible for the overall direction. Not just provision, but direction of their child's future. Overcommitted men, listen. Or husbands and fathers who are entertaining the possibility of bailing from your marriage and responsibilities. Listen to what Jim Dobson writes. "The Western world stands at a great crossroads in its history. It is my opinion that our very survival as a people will depend on the presence or the absence of masculine leadership in the home." And when that masculine leadership is like this, selfless, it's a bright future. And it was for Isaac. So that's principle number one, the principle of selflessness. Let's look at a second, and we'll pick it up in verse 3. This is the principle of separation. Verse 3, he says, "I'll make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughter of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But you'll go to my country, to my family, take a wife for my son Isaac." And the servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me into this land." Well, that would be a real problem. "Must I take your son back to the land from which you came?" But Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there." It's a solemn oath. "The Lord God of heaven, who took me out of my father's house and from the land of my family, and who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife from my son from there. And if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Now you can readily see that Abraham had these non-negotiable convictions about how this process was going to go forth. Conviction number one, it can't be a Canaanite woman. Number two, you can't leave him back there, or you can't take him back to Mesopotamia lest he decides, "Oh, I just want a summer home here." No, there has to be this separation. You have to have the right person, and has to be in the right place. Canaanite women, they're a bunch of pagans. Don't want that for my son. That's in his thinking. Mesopotamia isn't the promised land. God brought me from there to here, so he's got to stay in this land. So here's the plan. You go. You fetch the gal. God will give you a favor, and you bring her back. Abraham was operating under the principle I want you to consider. It's the principle of separation. He lived a separated life, Abraham did. He left paganism in Mesopotamia. And he came to this land and became devoted over time completely to the Lord God. And Abraham, dad, knew, "For Isaac, my son, to make his mark like I've made my mark, this boy has to also remain separated to God." That's the secret of his life, is separation. Parents, do your best to see that your kids are saved and separated. It's just a word for holy, walking with God. Influence them that they're saved and separated. I love what Charles Spurgeon used to say. He put it in a little poem. You've heard me say it before. "Before a child reaches seven, teach him all the way to heaven. And better yet, the work will thrive if he learns before he's five." Well, this guy's 40. But that has been a long process of principles that have been fostered by Father Abraham. Billy Sunday, you probably heard about him. He's a great evangelist from last century. I have a book signed by him. It's a prized possession. But he said something striking. He said, "The great tragedy of my ministry is that I have led thousands of people to Christ, but my own sons are not saved." Abraham spent a life with Isaac, nurturing him, developing him, training him. And this is simply an extension of that belief system of separation. Okay, let's just talk about some. Let's just sort of segue for a moment to the marriage of Isaac and his soon-to-be wife, Rebecca. There is a principle that anybody considering marriage ought to follow if you're a believer. It's the 2 Corinthians 6 principle. You know what it is. Do not be unequally yoked together with an unbeliever. And that, as you know, probably is an illustration from farming, where a farmer would take two animals, yoke them together at the neck to pull a plow to do work around the farm. Well, a wise farmer is going to take two animals of the same size, strength, and temperament. Not an unclean and a clean animal, not an ox, not a donkey, and put them together. But he wants them the same, relatively, so that they go in the same direction and not pull apart. And that's the same way in a relationship. Even though what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians primarily doesn't have to do with marriage, it's a good principle. In fact, one of the translations of 2 Corinthians 6 puts it this way: stop forming intimate and inconsistent relationships with unbelievers. Listen to this statistic. A survey of Christian teenagers revealed that 40% of them said they would date a non-Christian, and another 25% said they might. Well, if they might and they will, they just might and will marry them someday. And I've heard it, "Well, there's no good-looking guys at church." Or, "There's no chicks." Oh, that's an old term. "There's no gals to date at church." And so they go looking out in the world. And maybe something overcomes them and they get married. And then they discover after a while, instead of going in the same direction, it's like we're trying to pull a plow and go in the opposite direction. We're pulling away from each other. That's why Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 19, that we should marry only in the Lord. Oh, but we have so much in common. We both love jazz. Well, you should have more in common than jazz. A spiritual walk. And if you are in a dating process, follow the folksy wisdom of Mark Twain, who said, keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterwards. Especially if you're in a relationship like this.
You know, we can never be too specific in our prayers to God, especially when it comes to our children. It's an important responsibility to raise the next generation to carry on God's legacy. But we won't be successful in doing that without specific prayers. Well, as we bring our time to a close, here's Skip and Lenya Heitzik to expand just a bit on what we shared today.
Today's teaching was about passing the baton, and it's really fun. We have a grandson. So we've already seen Nathan come of age. He's 25, and we have a grandson, and it's just beautiful to watch the passing of the baton, the going on of the Heitzik name, whatever it
is. And last night, he took his first steps.
It was incredible. I have it on video.
I know, and you sent it out to us.
I sent it to everybody.
And just to see those first steps, and I just think the first steps in a long walk that he's going to take, hopefully hand in hand with God, like his dad and grandparents, but pretty astonishing.
And it's funny, what I was thinking is our first steps of faith, how timid and rocky and, you know, exciting and anticipatory. And I was thinking about walking in the Lord and those first few steps, just the excitement. And it is. It's almost like Peter getting out on the waves.
And Seth sat down last night and he started clapping for himself and he got the ball. And we get
that?
So excited when we do something for the Lord at first and we know he's with us and using us.
It's beautiful. Well, we're also covering, besides passing the baton, the holiday season, which is Halloween. And we've been trying to help out families, you know, how to navigate through that. And I was trying to think of what things have we done in our home that are helpful to Nathan during this time of year that might be helpful to some other parents.
Well, I know that we talked to him about Halloween early on and what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. He knew that his friends were going out trick-or-treating. We'd always bring him to the church. We try to capitalize on the interest, not to downplay the interest, but to let him have an alternative and edifying experience. He'd dress up as a biblical character. He'd come here and hear about truth and light and have so much fun. He looked so forward to it. But it wasn't without its struggles. I mean, he wanted to kind of go out in the neighborhood and be like every other kid.
A hooligan? Do some
hooligan
tricks. That's an old Michigan word. Two of my favorite costumes. His very first Halloween that I remember him participating in is we had bought these beautiful shiny sun, moon, and star masks.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
And
I love it.
We each wore one and we said we were creation. And Nathan loved that mom and dad had on the sun, moon, and star. And it was so cute. And we were talking about God's creation. And then each year he would think about what he wanted to be, you know, whether it was David or Goliath or, but the year I remember too, he wanted to be Jesus. And that was such a precious age that's what he, so of course we tried to get, you know, a Roman toga and a sash around him. And I remember we had neighbors who were not Christians. They loved us and Nathan. And he'd knock on the door and he'd say, trick or treat. And they'd say, who are you? And he says, I'm Jesus. I think, what a witness. You know, how many Jesuses turn up at the door on Halloween night?
Yeah, probably not any.
Yes. And it was just a wonderful witness that you could start sharing, you know, that was who Nathan wanted to be like. And so I do think you can find ways to witness and share and make it an opportunity.
Well, thanks, Lenya and Skip. And we can send you a copy of today's message when you contact us. It's available for just $6, including shipping, when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Or if you prefer, you can also write us at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And when you get in touch with us, don't forget to mention if it's your first time to do so. And we'll send you a free bonus teaching from Skip called Life Hurts, Where's God? Just call 1-800-922-1888.
And make the connection.
More to passing on a legacy to our children than just creating a will. And we'll learn more about that next time here in The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.